championship on the line right here. He's going for the corner. He's got it.
Hello and welcome to 4th and 5, your Longhorn Nation podcast. I'm your host, Will Baser, and I'm joined alongside by Joe Cook. You're listening to the Hornscast channel. It's the Hornscast show on Podbean, Spotify, Google Play, iTunes, wherever you guys find a podcast. Texas just came out of Lubbock and won in a pretty exciting fashion. So we're going to go ahead and take a look at that, bring it from very far eagle-eye view down to the microscopic with some Kool-Aid, water, and bleach, but before that with the big season picture. So Joe, let's go ahead and jump right into that. Texas just won in Lubbock, as I said. They're now 7-3 on the season, 5-2 in conference. Is this where we thought Texas would be at the beginning of the season? And if not, what has changed?
Yeah, I think 7-3 at this point is kind of on track. I don't think people may have expected a loss to Oklahoma State or Maryland, but being in contention for the Big 12 title and in contention to get 9 wins, I think is where people expected Texas to be. I think they kind of expected it just to kind of be through middling both offense and defense, not elite on either level, maybe above average passing with little Jordan Humphrey and Colin Johnson, but not, you know, we're basically seeing all conference quarterback play. And you know, above average offensive line play. So that's what's propelled Texas. I don't think people really expected that. They especially don't think that after giving him a big raise and seeing some schematic innovations on their side of the ball, that Todd Orlando's defense would be the issue this year. So big picture, they arrived at the destination, but I guess they turned off toll roads and highways to get there, like you can do on your maps apps. And that's where there's a lot of cause for concern.
I agree. We weren't expecting Todd Orlando's defense to be the problem, but we did acknowledge that there were depth concerns, especially in the front seven. We talked about this last show, well, the one you were on, with the fact that there's only Gary Johnson and Anthony Wheeler who have played, and beyond that, nobody was comfortable. And the thing about this defense, it's the 3-4 defense, it is supposed to highlight the linebacker play. That is why Malik Jefferson came to his own, especially when Gary Johnson was out there, is because they had two guys who were fast and flying and knew what they were doing. Now that you had Anthony Wheeler in there, a guy who lost his job to Gary Johnson last year, there's sort of been a little regression because the entire linebacking core is just taking a huge hit. You don't have the depth that you had last year. You don't have the talent that you had last year. And in a defense, again, that is supposed to highlight the linebackers, you're highlighting exactly what you don't have, which is linebackers. So especially with the nickelbacker and B-backer this year missing big parts, nickelbacker is something that was supposed to be kind of fixed with P.J. Locke, but P.J. Locke is really good going forward. As we've said, you know, he's good at contain, but beyond that, it's a problem. So you're right, defense has been a problem for things that we were expecting, but they were worse than we were expecting them to be. So the question then is, with the season being what it is, Texas is still in Big 12 championship contention. Should Texas fans be happy with where they are this season?
Yeah, I think they'd be crazy if they weren't. And I know that's pretty strong, but like, come on. Speaking of strong, where have we been these past 4 years and last year under Herman? Texas fans should be really happy. Now, that doesn't mean that they can turn blind eyes to issues like linebacker play, like fourth quarter comebacks given up. But, I mean, it's a lot easier to figure out these problems when you're winning. And that's something that Texas has not really been able to do these past few years. They've had problems that just get exposed over and over and result in back-breaking losses or in blowout losses. Last year was kind of the first thing where it's like, well, these problems are getting exposed, but somehow they're almost making up for it at the very end. And this year, those problems are getting exposed, but the offense and, you know, at times the defense, when put really with its backs against the wall, pull a win out and, you know, okay, we won, but we still have these problems. And that's not something that Texas has had in a while. I think going into next year, you see that the defense, as far as depth goes, there's still a lot of questions to be asked there. But the offense looks really good. And you have, you know, a capable quarterback leading it with a capable running back and some solid core returners on that offensive line also coming back. So things are definitely, I think, looking up on a team level more so than they're looking down. Texas fans should definitely be happy about where they're at. They shouldn't be satisfied, because at a place like Texas, you know, even though you're coming off of several losing seasons and 500 seasons, you have a lot of things built in that allow you to get back to the top pretty quickly. So they shouldn't be satisfied with 9 wins and satisfied with only competing for the conference title. But they should be happy, at least in the perspective of the past 5 years, that Texas is at where it's at now under the guy they brought in to lead the program.
Right. And I would argue on the other side that they should be a little annoyed. Texas fans should be annoyed with what has happened this season. Losses to Maryland and Oklahoma State. You cannot lose games you're supposed to win. Those are two games you are supposed to win. And I understand that Oklahoma State, there was a big pressure on the team to win. And that was part, you know, and there's also the suspensions in the first quarter that caused some huge issues. But still, we talked about that in the show. Those first quarter suspensions weren't really a huge reason for the loss to Oklahoma State. Texas has done what Herman has been known to do, which is mystifying losses to teams you shouldn't have losses to. Those need to be fixed. Texas has been walking this tightrope the entire season, and we've talked about it with Bobby Bowden's quote, which is, first you lose big, then you lose small, then you win small, then you win big. But the fact that you lost to Maryland kind of derailed the season a little bit in terms of the potential the season had. So if you win against Maryland right now, you're sitting at 8-2 instead of 7-3. Eight wins was what everybody wanted at the beginning of the season. And to have it at this point of the season would have been spectacular. But now you are fighting for 8 wins, especially with Iowa State coming in.
Yeah, I don't know about fighting for 8 wins. And although people like to think the worst case scenario, Kansas is kind of struggling. You know, and so I think 8 wins is a pretty safe bet. But yeah, this is the Iowa State team that's probably one of their best ever. I saw some people talk about this is going to be the biggest matchup in the history of the Longhorn Network, which is pretty funny. And also, I mean, for the Texas fan, pretty telling about the past few years since the Longhorn Network started. This is the biggest game. This is the ranked game, the 16 versus 15 matchup that I'm sure they thought they would have way more of when this started. I don't think anybody expected Kansas State to drop off as badly as it did. I don't think anybody expected Baylor to, I don't think, you know, anybody really expected this bad a year from TCU. I bet, you know, they thought, obviously the Longhorn Network is great for the out-of-conference games like the ones you get against Tulsa, but, you know, they put that home game in there for a reason, that night, that one last conference game in there for a reason, and this is what they were expecting. This is why they did it, and this is why, you know, we'll see how ESPN really wants to handle this, but this is exciting. This is, like I mentioned, a good Iowa State team, very similar stylistically to Texas, kind of does things a little bit more efficiently, I'd say, but these two teams run a lot of the same stuff and look pretty similar.
But still, going back to the fact that Texas fans should be annoyed, they should be annoyed with the lack of consistency that this team has played under. And I don't think Texas fans should be truly happy until this scenario happens. Texas wins every game in the state of Texas. That is when you'll know it's a good year for Texas football. When Texas wins every game in the state of Texas.
You mean like teams from Texas?
Every game in the state of Texas. That includes in Dallas, in Lubbock, in Fort Worth, and in Waco. When Texas can win, and all the games at home. When Texas can win all of those games, that is when you know that you should be 100% happy with where the program is.
So what does it mean when they, I mean, they have one more, obviously, but they've only lost one
right
this
Texas
year?
Is almost there.
Okay.
But still, there is the, I guess, but on top of this, you also have to win the games you're supposed to, like Maryland and Oklahoma State. Those are two games that you're supposed to win, and you didn't. So if West Virginia was your only loss this year, okay, so be it. Because Texas did their jobs against Oklahoma, and I guess Iowa State, they did their job against Texas Tech, and Iowa State, we'll see what happens, but they didn't do their jobs against a team that they should have done their jobs against, and that is on Tom Herman.
I agree. I mean, at the same time, when was the last time Texas was supposed to beat Oklahoma State? I can't think when they did in 2014. It was kind of a surprise to everybody. Maybe not a surprise. I'll have to, you know, I'll speak a little bit. But, I mean, that was a game, if I'm remembering correctly, I'm not thinking like, oh, yeah, this will be easy and we'll go in there and or Texas will go in there and Tyrone Swoops will put up a ton of points. If that was that was definitely that year. I mean, that just speaks a lot to the program and to Gundy. Now, this year with a guy like Taylor Cornelius, you know, you definitely, and Texas as hyped as they were, you definitely thought that, okay, this one is going to be the one that Texas, like you said, should go in and win. But it hasn't been like that on a consistent basis. And I think a lot of that credit definitely goes to Gundy. Because, you know, even last year, Mason Rudolph comes in and he is, you know, one of those Heisman candidates, and James Washington. And, you know, the year before, the Puna Ford holding game, that was, you know, 2014, I guess, is the last year you could kind of say that, yeah, they should have expected to win that game because that was one of the more average Oklahoma State teams. But over the past, you know, since I'd say about 2010, that's a game that's always been a toss-up, and it turned out to be a toss-up this year. But going forward, I'm going to say, like the point you're making, going forward, this is a game that Texas should think that they have the advantage in, either in Austin or in Stillwater. But this year, this was the first time in several years it was like that.
Right. So it sounds like you're pretty happy with the direction of the program and its future. Would you say that?
Yeah, definitely.
I feel so, too. I feel like Texas right now is in the correct position for going forward in the future, but are you happy with the staff Texas currently has?
I think that a lot of people are starting to pick up that there's a heavy imbalance. You've got four defensive coaches. You've got Jason Washington at corners, Craig Kniver at safeties and doing special teams, Todd Orlando coordinating the defense and linebackers, and then Oscar Giles doing defensive line. You got six on offense, including two covering wide receivers and the offensive coordinator. And then Tom Herman's an offensively inclined coach. You got seven out of your 11 coaches who are helping out with the offense. And, you know, with an offensive minded coach, it seems like that's kind of overkill. It's helped this year, it seems. Texas's offense is putting up, you know, with the help of solid quarterback play, not turning the ball over, putting up some really good numbers and pretty good score lines. But I mean, you have to consider maybe this offseason trying to remedy that, because it maybe you're asking these four coaches to do the responsibility that maybe five should be doing. So I don't know what moves are made to remedy that situation, but I definitely think it's something that Tom Herman needs to think about.
Right. I would agree. I think there's definitely an imbalance with the amount of wide receiver coaches. You might want to figure out what to do with Tim Beck and get somebody over on the offensive side to deal with the linebackers due to the fact that, again, they are such an important part to this defense. But let's go ahead and start to focus in on this Texas Tech game and what just happened in the past weekend. So let's do that with the drink of Kool-Aid, the sip of water, and the shot of bleach. We'll start off drinking the Kool-Aid here, because Sam Ellinger had a tremendous, not just that game, but a tremendous season. The dude threw for 312 yards, 22 for 34, had four touchdowns to his name. He's just been having an incredible year so far, aside from that Maryland game.
Right, and that's a Maryland game that a lot of his detractors thought should have cost him the job already. And luckily, I guess for Texas, Tom Herman didn't listen to those detractors and made his own decisions and kept rolling with them. Yeah, Sam is doing everything great. He did take a couple sacks. A couple were, you know, ones he should have avoided. A couple would have been very tough to avoid for any quarterback. Mm-hmm. But he's putting balls in in places where receivers can catch them, can make plays on them. He's getting throws out on time, and I think the one yard touchdown throw to Devin Duvernay really illustrates that. That's a secondary option on fourth and one on a very tight window that he was able to find and hit and make it not look pedestrian, but made it look like that was, you know, something he was really comfortable in doing.
And it was something that he hasn't been able to do in past years. Even during the Maryland game, there were balls where he was throwing them just a tad late on rollouts, and it just looked like there was something open, and then he pumped it, and then it was just gone. This one, he threw it on time, and it wasn't the only throw that he made that was in a pocket in threading the needle, right?
Right, and for the most part, he's protecting games. Now, they got, you know, in that fourth quarter, until they scored that last touch, you know, it takes a zero to go on a 17-0 run, I believe. Texas scored 14 in the fourth quarter. A lot of that was not until, you know, the very end. They scored really early on that long touchdown pass to Duvernay, and then had 10 minutes and 5 seconds of scoreless football, in which they had, you know, two drives that went nowhere, including a pivotal three and out. There's definitely room for improvement, and some of that's just the fact that Tech knew that they were going to try and run the ball out and sold out to try and make sure that didn't happen. But after that, when it was time to go win the game, he won the game. And I put it out on Twitter, like I said, single-handedly. Of course, he had help from little Jordan Humphrey and Gerard Hurd, but he picked up most of those yards on the ground with his feet, and he did it at the exact right time too. He made the throws when he needed to, put them in place, and then did not take a negative play when you couldn't afford to. And that's a little bit, you know, that's kind of understanding the game a little bit more than what he showed last year, and that's, you know, definitely a reason to be real excited about the future of his play. I know a lot of Texas fans have kind of said, like, you know, if it weren't for Kyler, or if it weren't for Will Grier, he'd be in the national conversations. Well, part of that has to do with the offenses that they play in. They're very explosive offenses, and Texas's offense, you know, this time more than any other week, has not really proven to be explosive. But he's leading efficient drives. I mean, you had an 8-minute drive for Texas.
18 plays.
You also had a 12-play, 75-yard drive. Like, it takes some skill to lead that type of thing, and Sam Ellinger's definitely showed that skill this year.
Yeah, and it's been the entire year, right? What was that stat that you had? It was 3,000. He's on pace for 3,000 yards, including missing a game.
Yeah, there's a good chance that it'll be a little difficult with Iowa State because they're a stout passing defense. Stout total defense, but if you include Iowa State, include Kansas, and then probably and include the bowl, that's 12 games played this season, and you know it'll likely put him at a really good chance to hit 3,000 yards through the air. I'm not exactly sure what his rushing numbers are. I should have had that up immediately, but I mean, for a guy that a lot of people, even after the first game, were saying like, oh, let's move number 11 to H-back, move number 11 to linebacker. Maybe not a lot of people, but a very vocal amount of people were saying those things. And now for him to almost have 3,000 yards, that's pretty impressive. And I think it shows that, I'll keep saying this over and over again, Texas should be pretty happy with the quarterback they have heading into the future. Right. Here we go. I got the rushing number. The rushing number is 343. So he's got a good chance to hit 500. Keontae Ingram's already done that. Trey Watson's already done that. If they do that, that's a 1,500 yards rushing total. That's pretty solid for the year with three games left.
Especially compared to last year when they weren't anywhere near that.
Right.
So that brings us to the wide receivers that helped out Sam Ellinger. Sam Ellinger, right, had a tremendous game. He's had a tremendous year, but it is a lot due to the wide receivers that he has. Now, Sam Ellinger did a phenomenal job with the absence of Colin Johnson, but so did little Jordan Humphrey. I think partially the greatness or the stepping up of the wide receiver room in this game is on Sam Ehlinger being able to make some incredible throws, like the one to Devin Duvernay in the corner for the long touchdown, or a few, you know, like threading the needle to Devin Duvernay on the on that touchdown. But definitely Devin Duvernay has stepped up in the past two games, especially in the absence of Colin Johnson. Jerod Hurd has become a nice possession wide receiver in the absence of Colin Johnson. Andrew Beck didn't really do well in the passing game, but he made one really, really clutch snag on a fourth down and five to keep Texas's drive alive on their side of the field. And then Malcolm Epps as well coming in and showing out for an 18-yard catch. The wide receiver room has really stepped up, and Sam Ehlinger has been able to really deliver the correct balls at the right time and the right position to help those guys out. I'm very impressed with where this wide receiver room is currently.
Yeah, definitely. I think, I mean, we all know how talented little Jordan Humphrey and Colin Johnson are, but to see Devin Duvernay take advantage of teams paying attention to those guys, and then, you know, in the case of this last game, paying attention to that one guy, and really starting to figure out, you know, there were times earlier in the year, I think, you know, we all saw Kansas State and Maryland, or Kansas State specifically, where he had some deep balls that he just did not track very well, and he looked kind of lost out there, like a sprinter struggling to adapt to football. And there are times this year where he's done a tremendous job of not only finding soft spots in coverage and sticking there, but also, you know, still getting the football and getting upfield, and then just also running routes. I mean, the route that he ran against West Virginia, that tying or that go ahead touchdown at the time, that's a high level route. I know a lot of players can run that route, but a lot of players can mess that up. And especially in that situation, you don't want to mess it up then. And he did not, and was wide open and stumbled into the end zone a little bit, but it's a lot because he ran that, put a great stop on that stop and go. So his development has been one of the more,
surprising.
It's been a little bit surprising, but a big bright spot because it allows pressure, a little bit of pressure to be taken off 84 and 9.
Right. Something kind of like on the other side with JD on high, where teams are often just focusing on guys like TJ Fasher and Antoine Wesley, and then JD on high for Texas Tech is left wide open. Devin Duvernay is starting to fill that role this year. Now with Colin Johnson likely being out for a few more games, I don't know if that's official, but it's not looking like he's going to be returning anytime soon. Devin Duvernay is going to have to start stepping up, and so is Jerod Hurd in this offense. And I feel, especially since we saw it against Texas Tech, that those two guys can step up for this offense. Now, talking about the offense in general has just done incredibly well over the past 2 weeks. Well, 3 weeks, honestly, against Oklahoma State, West Virginia, and Texas Tech. Unfortunately, the defense hasn't been able to hold up their end of the bargain, but it has a lot to do with Sam Ehlinger. But you just saw in this game, like we said, Texas successfully did what they wanted to do on offense in these past two games, which is they played to set their own tempo, which was, in a word, to slow it down, you saw it with 48 rushes for 4.2 yards per rush. Then they backed it up with explosive plays like the one to Devin Duvernay, the ones to little Jordan Humphrey, where they got their playmakers the balls, they gave them chances to make plays, and the playmakers made the plays. You saw this happen in the second and third quarter. The first quarter, the fourth quarter, a little shaky. But in the second and third quarter, they out-controlled Texas Tech 10 minutes to 4 minutes in time of possession. That includes that 8-minute drive for 18 plays with a touchdown in the second quarter. 6 out of the 10 drives were under 10 plays, so that means you had 4 out of 10. 40% of your drives were over 10 plays. And the two of those 6 drives that weren't over 10 plays were touchdowns. So they were just super quick touchdowns. That is exactly what you want out of this Texas offense. And Tom Herman is finally starting to get his identity on offense in Texas. So let's go ahead and turn over to the defensive side for the Kool-Aid. There's not much, but there are two major things, which are turnovers and Charles Omenihu. The turnovers, they're a little bittersweet for me because I felt like they were very, very lucky and very much helped out by Jet Duffy's lack of ball security. But the fact that you were heady enough to make the plays was what made the difference. In the Big 12, turnovers are currency on defense. It's just a fact.
I think most turnovers have to do with luck. I'm talking to you, David Gibbs. Your philosophy is a lie. Turnovers have to do with luck. It has to deal with a quarterback throwing to the wrong spot. It has to deal with getting the bounce of the ball to, you know, go into a defender's hands. It has to do with an inexperienced quarterback not tucking the football twice and trying to throw it away, but not having enough on the throw to get it out of bounds. You take advantage of the luck that you receive every time. Like you mentioned, it's currency, and even though a lot of those were inside your own 40 and, you know, a couple even inside your own 20, you get off the field, you allow no points, and you come off feeling pretty good about yourself. Any turnover is positive all the way around, and those four turnovers were, you know, let's look at it this way. If there's not those four turnovers, there's a, you know, argument to be made that those could be four scoring drives, and then this is a blowout. Sometimes it's better to be lucky than good, and, you know, that's part of a contributing factor to pretty much any football season.
Right, and it's the reason Texas' defense was so good through the beginning of the season was they were able to take advantage of turnovers. When the offense made a mistake, Texas was there to make them pay. Now, on the other side of that, their aggression often leaves them vulnerable, as we've seen happen with Chris Boyd trying to attack the ball midair and just not having great situational awareness and letting it go over his fingertips for touchdowns. But with that comes getting the ball to your offense on your own 30, or stopping a potential touchdown drive, or just huge changes in momentum. So that's what you get with these turnover happy defenses. It's boom or bust. And Texas definitely went bust against Oklahoma State and West Virginia, not being able to get any turnovers, even though they were there for the taking, but they finally did it against Texas Tech. Now, Charles Omenihu was a guy where it really wasn't much luck. The guy has just been Texas's best defensive player this entire year, hands down. The guy has been incredible in pass rush. He has 7.5 sacks. Texas has 19 sacks in general, so he has more than 40% of Texas's sack generation in total. The guy has been explosive in pass rush. He has been solid in run defense. He's been the whole package when it comes to your defensive end.
Yeah, Breckenhager, for all the effort he gives, is a little one-dimensional and a little undersized. Chris Nelson, for all the things that he does correctly, doesn't do a whole lot excellently. Charles Omenihu has kind of become the total package. He's definitely a guy that has a future in the NFL. His main position may not be a 4-eye defensive lineman, but the fact that he's putting these types of numbers up, I think he had 12 tackles for loss this year, which is right behind Gary Johnson, who has the team lead with 13. And that's as a defensive lineman in a defense that's designed not to really showcase defensive linemen. He's got a team leading 7 sacks, 34 tackles total. He's even got a pass defended, and you even saw him do some other stuff in this past game. You saw him drop back off the line of scrimmage from a 2-point stance, something he hasn't done since his freshman year. One of his tackles was against a wide receiver who thought he found a soft spot in coverage, and immediately there's, you know, big Charles Omenihu right on top of him. He's done so much for this team. Him coming back this year has not only been a benefit for Texas, but I think assuredly it's going to be a benefit for him because what he's doing from that 4-eye spot, putting those stats up, has been, you know, nothing short of pretty remarkable. And he's going to be a tough defensive lineman to replace. All three will in their own way, but his production is going to be tough to replace.
Right. He will kind of be this year's Puna Ford. But less so important as Puna Ford was, because you know, the nose tackle in this defense is pretty important. But let's get to the next guy in Cameron Dicker. He is our last drink of Kool-Aid, because the guy made a 52 and a 48-yard field goal. As a freshman, that's pretty remarkable. He's reminding me a lot of what Michael Dickson was like his freshman year, which was a lot of, wow, this guy has a lot of potential and some inconsistencies here and there. But a lot of you are just, a lot of it just saying, wow, I mean, look at how far he's kicking it. Look at where he's putting it. And if he can just get consistency down, then it's going to be, he's going to be tremendous. Dicker's a little ahead of Michael Dickson in that regard, though, consistency wise.
Yeah, it's a little tough to compare. I think that's a fair estimate. I think that 52-yard field goal was with the wind. He boomed it, made it look easy. He had, you know, the other thing that I think we kind of forget about is kickoffs. And I think for the first portion of the year, last year, Josh Rowland, he just wasn't kicking it out of the end zone. I think that was by design. I think the coaches told him that. And eventually, you know, he got it out of the end zone, but it was on a low line drive and it wasn't always successful. Cameron Dicker won the kicking job, goes out there with the wind, just kicks everything way out. So there's no chance at a return, and pins, you know, puts them as deep as he can against a pretty stiff wind when kicking in the first and third quarter. So that second quarter, the 52-yard field goal is with the wind. I think that was the one that kind of looked like it curved a little bit on TV, but, you know, accurate, right, and it ended up going through, which is all that really counts. That 46-yard field goal, not only was it, you know, put to make it a 17-point game, it was also, that was into the wind. And I think there was some, you know, I was kind of second guessing. I forgot the situation that led to that. I think it was third and long, kind of outside of binder range, I guess we'd like to call it. But, you know, that's not an easy kick into the wind near the student section. You know, it, just impressive to do as a freshman. He's a college kicker. He's going to have some consistency problems. But, you know, when he's on, and he's been, for a freshman, on more than I think a lot of people expected him to be.
All right, let's go ahead then and get to the parts of the game where it wasn't so much exciting or game-breaking. The guys did their job, or it just wasn't super impressive. Let's start off with the run game, because the run game, while Keontae Ingram did a great job getting 84 yards, you know, it wasn't exciting. They just did their job. You know, getting 202 yards overall is great, but they did it on 48 carries, which means they got 4 yards per carry. So yeah, there were some breakout.
Was it that many? 58 plus
minus 45 yards of sacks.
Yeah. I'm looking at Ellinger with 15 for 14. Dang, I did 60 plus 143, 154, right?
Right. So Ellinger had 59 yards rushing, minus 45 yards of sacks.
Yeah, I keep forgetting that college does the stupid way.
Yeah. So, yeah, Keontae Ingram had some great runs, a 23-yard run. I mean, he's good for one explosion between 20 and 30 yards per game. But beyond that, it was more so just Texas just shoving it down Texas Tech's throat. Texas Tech's defensive line isn't great, so they did okay getting a push. 4 yards per carry is okay. It's going to get the job done, but it wasn't anything spectacular for this run game.
Yeah, I agree with that, and I think you saw it definitely took a hit when Keontae Ingram re-aggravated his hip injury. That was a weird targeting review, because I don't think anybody knew like why a normal-looking tackle was getting reviewed, but yeah, Trey Watson, he's going to give you hard yardage, but he's not going to give you extra yardage very often, at least not as often as Keontae Ingram. And then Sam Ellinger, you know, just over the course of that last drive, that's probably what got him into positive territory with the 14-yard net total at the end of the game. So, it, like I mentioned earlier, it did help it contribute to the three and out that set Tech up for the winning score. the offensive line probably didn't have one of their best games, either running or passing the football, which is kind of weird when you hear that they ended up gaining at a certain point over 200 yards. But there were just times where it wasn't there, wasn't moving forward. So not a bad thing. Definitely something they're going to have to improve this week against the best defense in the conference, and one that prides itself on playing tough and playing in the trenches and stopping the run game with the guys they have. So this is, it's a little bit of a burn that Keonta Ingram may not be fully healthy, but they're going to need every yard they can get from every back.
And as you said, the offensive line didn't play great in the run game or the pass game. A lot of that had to do with guys like Elijah Rodriguez and Calvin Anderson having a little bit of trouble in this game. I don't know what's up with Calvin Anderson, but he looked a little slow during this game. Patrick Vahe had some miscommunications, one especially with Ingram, where they ran into each other, for giving a guy a lane up the middle for Sam Ehlinger. There was a lot of just miscommunications and bad fundamental play from this offensive line. I don't know what it was. I'm going to throw a dart and say fatigue, maybe. I don't know why. But the offensive line did their job just enough on enough plays to give Sam Ehlinger time to throw, which has been huge this year. It's been so great this year. I mean, that was what was missing last year for this offense. And you had the quarterbacks. I don't even remember if Texas fans remember how much the quarterbacks were running around with their heads cut off last year, just trying to survive pass rush. This year, they have a solid pocket most of the time, and it's been able to give guys like Sam Ehlinger time to put the ball in the right place. In the run game as well, Texas had a decent run blocking last year, but the run blocking this year is just so much better. It wasn't spectacular, but they did their job. 4 yards per carry will win you a football game.
Definitely. I mean, first down on 3 downs. But as we all know, it's not that simple. But yeah, definitely, you're going to get a tougher defense in Texas Tech this week. So definitely have to step it up as that goes. And luckily, knock on wood, doesn't seem like they're too hampered by injuries more than just general course of the season dings. That's not a blessing that Texas has had over the past couple of years.
But it does bring us to our shots of bleach. And the first shot of bleach we have has to be Texas's defense late in the season. Let's start off with the defensive line here. That'll be our first part of this first shot. It's a big shot. It's a big shot. The defensive line. And the main problem here is pass rushing. And I talked to a friend of mine who is a pass rush specialist in the NFL, and we were talking about what is wrong with Texas's defensive line. I sent him a few plays, and he came back with me saying it's the 3-4 defense. The 3-4 defense is not great for your defensive line. It's not meant to showcase a defensive lineman. It's meant to showcase your linebackers. And Texas' defensive linemen, on top of that, beyond Omenihu, don't really use pass rushing moves. So it's more of bull rush than try to throw your blocker. There's no swim move. There's no signature move for these guys. No swim moves, nothing. So, and that's partially just due to what Todd Orlando wants to do with the 3-4, right? What he wants to do is he wants to use those guys up front as space eaters. You use the defensive lineman to eat up a gap, and then you send a second or third level blitzer into that gap. Now, even the second and third level blitzers, they are not using pass rushing moves, and they are going and catching blocks. What I mean by that, and they're not using pass rushing moves, they're not turning their shoulders and trying to get skinny through a hole. They aren't trying to swim move. They aren't trying to do anything. They are just running to a gap, and then they're running right into a blocker and then getting caught. So there is just a there's just a misuse of this 3-4 right now so far, and it's due to a lot of personnel and not understanding what you're supposed to do and not using moves that they need to have.
Yeah, I'm not going to be terribly hard on the defensive line when they're consistently asked to go 3-on-5. That's just right. A numbers game that's really, really tough to win. If you're going to go 3-on-5 and set things up for the linebackers, you have to help them out. I mean, and blitzing from depth as often as Texas does, just from a normal position, not from like a, you know, on the line of scrimmage in the A gap and the B gap position, Texas blitzes from depth, not just with their two middle linebackers, but with also their nickel backer, who's, you know, 6 yards away from the tackle. Anybody's going to see that. And there are times when delayed blitzes work, but these delayed blitzes are coming not when, you know, these guys are preoccupied with two, or not when two blockers are preoccupied with one person on the side that delayed blitz is coming. The defensive line is being asked to do so much. These guys are still, you know, 1.5 blockers are able to do the job. And so that you know, that one blocker who's kind of halfway in responsibility is able to see a full-on blitz from depth instead of from a blitzing position and able to stop it. There were times when Texas sent 5 or 6 that didn't really get home, or Jet Duffy did a pretty good job of stepping up in the pocket. So my issue with the pass rush isn't so much like the defensive line problems, but just the overall scheme of trying to blitz from depth when you don't have guys who are very fast moving downhill to the football and into position of getting skinny, like you mentioned.
Right. That is, and that, when I told him Texas likes to use delayed blitzes, he laughed. I said in the last show with the Texas Tech guy, when you don't have the personnel, delayed blitzes are like cinnamon, right? They're good. They're good at the right situation with the right amount in the right place. But if you use too much of it, then you're going to end up choking on it and it'll ruin the meal. I guess choking would ruin the meal. But that is exactly what's happening with delayed blitzes here. You don't have the personnel, as you said, and you're using it so much, it ends up being just, okay, here it comes for the offensive linemen, and you get nothing out of it. So that is one huge problem with this defense we keep on talking about. And on top of that, the linebacker play. The linebacker play this year has just been atrocious. We've talked about it ad nauseum. But let's get into it again, because you can't, in a 3-4 defense, as we said, it doesn't help out the linemen, it helps out the linebackers. And the fact that you don't have linebackers this year, or you don't have quality linebacking this year, is a huge problem for this defense. And it looks like it's going to be a huge problem for next year's defense as well, when you lose the two guys that have the most experience on this team.
Yeah, I think that's both good and bad at this point, knowing what we know about these linebackers. I mean, Gary Johnson's able to kind of make plays on his own, but he's struggled to make plays in tandem because of just the overall play that they've had together. It's still an issue, and it's not an issue that's going to be solved immediately by some young guy who's ready to go. I mean, there's a decent amount of hype around Adeleye Adeyewe, and we mentioned this last week, but he's not performed up to the coach's expectation in order to be able to go however many downs or however many snaps he needs to play in a game. Linebacker, I mean, we just kind of have to, it's unfortunate, but I think Texas fans may just have to accept that linebacker play probably isn't going to magically improve over the course of these last three games.
Right. I think that was a big reason for Jet Duffy having as many yards as he had. 500-something net yards, 117 yards rushing minus, not counting the sacks. He had 117 yards rushing, which is about 5 yards per rush. And I talked about it with Jeremy Gilland. You had to pick your poison in which linebacker you're going to use to spy, in which linebacker you're going to have in the backfield stopping the pass or guarding the running back. And Texas Tech would just basically, okay, yeah, Wheeler is on the running back, we're going to go ahead and run him out. Or Wheeler is on the quarterback, yeah, we're going to go ahead and let Jet Duffy run with the ball. It was pretty pretty obvious what was going on there.
Yeah, it seemed like also the plan, to my eye, the plan appeared to be a lot of bend but don't break. It worked out because the breaking came from Texas Tech instead of, Texas Tech broke itself oftentimes. But it seems like Texas was very content to let everything play out in front of it and then try and pursue to the football. Problem is, when you're lacking athleticism and then after a certain point in the game, you're lacking a lot of depth, you're getting guys in there who are playing their extended snaps for the first time in their career. That strategy kind of wears down because those guys aren't as good as getting to the football as your starters are. So the plan kind of wore down as time went on. I don't think it was a bad idea considering Jet Duffy is prone to make mistakes, but he didn't make. I mean, I can't tell if this is a Texas problem or a opponent positive. He didn't make a whole lot of mistakes, and maybe that has to do with the pressure not being able to get home. Maybe it. These guys just get on whenever they see burnt orange on the other side, but he hit a lot of throws throughout the course of the game, including, you know, the deep ball to Wesley that he brought in for the touchdown, had the first touchdown that was over a leaping Caden Stearns after Devontae Davis got beat, and then he gave, I forgot what wide receiver it was, he gave him a chance. It was kind of an underthrown brawl, maybe it was strategic, but he gave him a chance, and Anthony Cook ended up committing pass interference. So maybe, I don't know, maybe it was just one of these guys who had another great game, but the defensive game plan definitely kind of wore down as time went on.
Yeah, but I think it was more the fact that Texas gave up the deep ball against Jet Duffy, and that's Jet Duffy's bread and butter right there. That was a huge problem, especially for the cornerbacks. The cornerbacks oftentimes gave these wide receivers free releases, especially Chris Boyd and Devontae Davis, and even to some extent Anthony Cook. Chris Boyd on two passes in the fourth quarter gave up over 100 yards to Antoine Wesley because he gave up free releases to Antoine Wesley. These are two guys, TJ Vasher and Antoine Wesley, where if you bully them at the line, then you almost automatically win. But Texas gave these guys 5-6 yard releases. And for guys who are basically basketball players, you can't do that. You cannot do that. It worked right into those guys' hands. And then there was just, especially on Chris Boyd's lack of situational awareness, which we've talked about at the very beginning of this year, on Chris Boyd's part, when he gets beat, you jump in the air and try to tip the ball away? No, you can't do that. You can't rely on your athleticism that much. It's going to get you beat, and it did twice. Three times, actually. One was for the game-tying score.
Right. It's just a kind of another one of those things where there's not a whole lot you can do about it at this point. It's the Jekyll and Hyde nature of Chris Boyd. Some days you'll get the guy who shuts down their their second receiver, just kind of completely erases him from the game. Sometimes you'll get him matched up on the one receiver, and he'll just be back and forth with him, and the fourth hurts a little bit more than the back sometimes. So it's a tough conference to be a corner in, but he kind of sometimes makes it look a lot tougher than it needs to be.
But it wasn't just Chris Boyd is what I'm trying to say here. They gave these free releases to wide receivers. On the first touchdown to TJ Vasher, Devontae Davis catches TJ Vasher, doesn't try to affect his route at all, and it gives TJ Vasher a free release to the back, which then, you know, it's perfect timing for the ball coming from Jet Duffy. If you even, you know, tap TJ Vasher there and disrupt the route, then the play timing is all off, and maybe Caden Stearns is able to get back there and pick off that pass. It's just little things like that I think are game plan problems for this defensive backfield. And I don't know who to blame there, but you know, in the fourth quarter, Texas dropped 8, went into the zone coverage. That worked directly into Tech's plan. I mean, Tech's defense. And the air raid is made to basically just pick apart zone defenses. They did exactly that. When Texas dropped back 8, Texas Tech had a field day in their secondary.
Yeah, it's just part of the perils of facing that offense in this conference.
Right, and that also gives us to our next shot of bleach, which is another fourth quarter lead lost. Texas has now lost the lead in the fourth quarter the most times in the nation since 2017, with 7 times. Now, 2 of those times were this Texas Tech game and the Oklahoma game, but that is still not a good stat to be on, to have your name on, not the best.
I think we realized this before the season and definitely after the Maryland game. Tom Herman talked about developing and finishing over and over and over and over and over and over. This team pulls it out at the end. It finishes off at the very end. But I think there are a lot of times where Herman and the staff would prefer to have it a little bit more in hand, looking like the TCU game, looking like the USC game, finishing it off like that. Maybe it's a little bit, it's definitely tougher to do that against some of the more better teams in the Big 12, especially explosive offenses like Tech and Oklahoma, who can get up the field extremely quickly, probably quicker than anybody else in the country, and West Virginia. But you got to be able to, you know, put the game away, and it's a little bit better, but it's not as good as it should be.
Right. And what exactly happened in that fourth quarter, though, Joe? I think the answer has to be with the onside kick. I think the onside kick really, really helped out Texas Tech, because here is what the ending looked like. I know Texas fans watched it, but let me break it down a little bit into these pieces. Texas Tech goes on a 14-play goes on to make it a 14-point game in 12 plays. So they took 12 plays on this Texas defense. Then they get that great onside kick. And, I mean, if you're P.J. Locke, you know, your job's supposed to catch it, but that's a really hard play to make, honestly. I mean, it's a hard play to make in baseball where that's your job. So, you know, you're on the pitcher's mound and you get a line drive straight at you. Are you going to catch it? You know, it's coin flip probably. There's that. Texas Tech then goes 8 plays for a touchdown. In the matter of, 5 minutes, you have 20 plays and two scoring drives. That's going to wear down on your defense, who is already playing their third string players. Caden Stearns is out at this point. Devontae Davis is out at this point. Brecken Hager is basically a gimp out there. I mean that in the non-sexual way, but Brecken Hager is out there, you know, limping around with his bum shoulder. And Josh Thompson is out as well. I think even P.J. Locke was out for some points. It was just all hands on deck. Donovan Duvernay was out there. And that guy, I think that was his first time seeing legitimate game minutes. So you had those guys out there. Then after that 8-play touchdown drive, Texas gets the ball, and they go 3 and out. So then Texas's defense is on the field once again, and they give Texas Tech five plays, 72 yards for a touchdown. Overall, in this end of this fourth quarter, Texas Tech had the ball 7 minutes to UT having it for 1:38, and UT was running time with the rush. So that is what happened in that fourth quarter, is Texas Tech just had an explosion of time of possession due to Texas not getting the ball for long enough and just not getting the ball in general.
Yeah, it's when you play in a track meet with a team that wants to get into a track meet, you're not going to do well, and that's not Texas's style. Just got to put it away. Don't put your defense in those situations. Get those extra yards running the football like you had been earlier in the game, and a lot of this will just be a moot point.
But, I mean, it wasn't just the fourth quarter, though. Texas just could not stop Texas Tech overall. I think including their one punt, they had one punt in the game, one punt, and that fourth down stop, which was just mind-boggling from Cliff Kingsbury, and also the end of the game, which was 3 plays and 11 yards. Texas Tech averaged 48 yards per drive. Take out those three drives that I was talking about, 62 plays, 62 yards per drive. 62. That's not good for your defense. You cannot sustain a win with that type of defense. And honestly, Texas just not being able to get turnovers in the end zone towards the end of that game was a large reason that Texas Tech was able to have that offensive explosion. It was always there. It just finally happened in that fourth quarter. So the last bit of bleach that we have for you today is the injuries. Honestly, Texas was very, very lucky towards the beginning of the season in terms of injuries. They didn't lose many people, and when they did, they were in positions where they could afford it. Like with Malcolm Roach at B-backer, you had Jeffrey McCulloch back there to back him up. With the corners, you have Anthony Cook. But when you start losing guys like Brecken Hager, and when you start losing guys like Chris Nelson or getting him beat up, or Caden Stearns back there at safety, or Brandon Jones back at safety, or Colin Johnson, or along the offensive line, that's when you're going to start to have issues because you do not have depth there. And right now, Texas is pretty beat up over these past few games. And it's starting to take a toll. You can see it on the defense, and it's not looking
pretty.
Yeah,
they're about to go face-to-face with one of the more physical teams in the Big 12. They need everybody to get healthy really quickly, which is a lot easier said than done, especially when one of your star players is coming out of the concussion protocol. I'd be shocked if it wasn't that. You just have to hope for the best with those guys recovering. I think Texas, like every school, does a great job of trying to make sure that they put the player's future and safety over the, you know, over the needs of the present. But these players, they want to play. They go to Texas to play football to try and win, and they want to get it out there on the field too. But that's if they're not able to, you got to prepare everybody else. You saw a good job of that with Jerod Hurd, who Herman praised post game, said he learned several different positions. You saw that with Malcolm Epps getting a catch out there, and you saw that with, Cade Brewer getting action, not really getting any receptions or opportunities, but he's out there playing, ready to go. So it's just a tough situation that Texas has to prepare for in multiple senses, and this is why they get paid the big bucks to do it. It's just bad timing, but it's not like it's not like they're the only teams going through that right now.
You say it isn't an excuse usually, but honestly, I can't think of, it's hard to not use it as an excuse, really. I know other teams are going through it, but at some point, when you have just an explosion of injuries, you have to be able to point to that and be like, okay, here's the problem. This is the problem for Texas. I know there were problems before this, but this made the problems. This accentuates the problems.
Exactly.
So I think that is it for us today. Joe, do you have anything you want to leave us off with? Any thoughts? No? All right. So that will be your 4th and 5. I've been your host, Will Baizer. You guys can find me on Twitter at WILLBAIZER or on the Football Brainiacs. That's texas.thefootballbrainiacs.com. Joe Cook, my man, where can we find you?
You can find me on Twitter at JosephCook89 or on Inside Texas.
Or you guys can find us and our other shows on the Hornscast channel. It's the Hornscast channel on Podbean, Spotify, iTunes, Google Play, Overcast, Stitcher. Wherever you guys can find a podcast, you'll find the Hornscast. On that note, thank y'all for listening. We'll see y'all later this week. Hook 'em.